What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, June 30th. Greg Miller is off on vacation, so you're stuck with me, Tim Geddes.
Stuck with you?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I'm the busiest lady in the business.
This is such a pleasure.
Andrew Renee. The first time you and I have ever done a podcast together, just us.
It is.
It's an exciting time.
I think it's going to be great.
I think it's going to be great, too. Yeah, Greg's off gallivanting the world and doing a whole bunch of stuff, which means a little bit of housekeeping. Next week, there's not going to be shows. We've been talking about this. Instead, you're going to get, kind of funny, the new class, which includes Kevin, Andy, my brother, Joey Noel. They're all going to be streaming all week during the normal times that the morning show and Kind of Funny Games Daily will occur. If you didn't know, Kind of Funny Games Daily happens each and every day right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can then watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames for the VOD, or if you want it on podcast services, it's available across the globe and all of that. If you want to be part of the show, you can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. That is harder to say. I always was giving Greg shit for it because that's just a weird
thing.
It hangs you up a little bit. But yeah, no, KFGD to be part of the show. Leave your questions, squad up with some people and do all that other stuff. And if you want to be part of this episode, you can go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong to let us know if we need to correct anything that we get incorrect throughout this episode. At the end of the show, Andrea will read them off to us.
I'm on top of it.
Very, very excited about all of this. How are you? How's everything going?
You know, everything's been going great. The girls were in town the last couple of days.
Yeah.
We shot some really fun Patreon-exclusive content. We did a really fun piece where we did a wine tasting with the new Game of Thrones wines. And it's excellent. It's a secret segment that's going to be airing in July. Still have until the end of the day today to get in at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames.
So is this the first time that you guys have all been together besides E3 since the launch?
No. So we have, we are scheduling at least once a month for us to be able to get together and make content. We had a shoot before E3. I guess since E3. Yes,
yeah.
That is correct.
All right. Well, that is very, very exciting stuff. I cannot wait to see it. Very proud of you girls.
Tim.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy
birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tim. Happy birthday to you.
Yay. All right. I would make a wish, but it already happened. The bandicoot has been saved.
Yeah. They're trick candles, I think. I'm sorry.
Don't you blow those out. There's a lot of smoke.
They're coming back. Well,
they won't be stopped. Well, thank you guys. That was unexpected. I appreciate it.
A lot of smoke.
Yeah, a lot of smoke. I like it. It gives a little bit of atmosphere. You know, some volumetric fog. It's still on over there.
The candles are still going.
Oh, man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, where we dive into video game news every day, and we try to be professionals. And you know what? There's nothing that says professionals like an obscene amount of smoke. Let's get to the news with what is and will always known. I don't know. What does he say? What is and will
forever will be.
Will be Roper's Report.
It's getting slower, Kevin. What's happening?
Why did it change pitch for some of it?
I don't know.
Oh, God bless. Andy, can we do that again?
Thank you.
That sounds much better. Andrew, today we have three news stories.
A baker's dozen.
Oh, you did it. You did it.
I heard you guys giving me some shade yesterday about why I don't say it, but Greg just always seems so excited
to say it.
I just let him do it.
I like that. The first news story comes from Jason Schreier over at Kotaku. Sources say Mass Effect Andromeda will not get single player DLC. A widely shared Facebook post claimed that BioWare had canceled Mass Effect Andromeda's downloadable content. The good news, that Facebook post was bullshit. The bad news, they guessed correctly, Mass Effect Andromeda will indeed not be receiving any single-player DLC. Three people familiar with BioWare's plans have told me. This will be a drastic departure for the long-running sci-fi series. All three Mass Effect games receive single-player content after launch, with expansions like Mass Effect 2's Lair of the Shadow Broker and Mass Effect 3's Citadel earning praise for their stories and character development. Fans had expected a similar approach for Andromeda, but mediocre reviews and animation memes have steered the series in an unfortunate new direction. In April, as we reported, BioWare scaled down its Montreal studio, whose staff had developed Mass Effect Andromeda with help from BioWare's other studios in Edmonton and Austin. The chilly reception of Andromeda led the company to transfer BioWare Montreal's employees to other projects, including Star Wars Battlefront 2, Anthem, and the next Dragon Age. Although a small team remains in place to work on Mass Effect Andromeda's multiplayer and patch support, which isn't done yet, most of BioWare Montreal has moved on. BioWare also shelved plans for a sequel to Mass Effect Andromeda, sources said. While reporting that news, I'd been pretty sure that Mass Effect Andromeda wouldn't be getting single-player DLC. There are a few people left that could work on it, but I want to be more confident. So over the past weeks, I've confirmed the news with three sources familiar with the company's plans, all of whom spoke anonymously so as not to jeopardize their careers. Unless BioWare decides to make some sort of drastic pivot, plans can always change, Mass Effect Andromeda will not be getting single-player DLC. What are your thoughts, Andrea?
This is a big ol' bummer. I was really looking forward to getting back into Andromeda post-patches and revisiting it and hopefully having a better experience the second time around. And I was going to wait for the DLC as like a motivator for me to go back to it, because I still have so many games that I have yet to play this year. It's not surprising. I mean, we heard earlier this year that the studio had been downsized post-launch, which is normal. Most studios do downsize after they ship their game because they just don't need that many people anymore. But when those reports originally came out, the suspicions were there. Is DLC even coming at all? Mm. Is, you know, the plans for the next Mass Effect in jeopardy? What does that look like? And this is just, you know, it's sad. As a big Mass Effect fan, I was really hoping to see more, but I understand why they're not going to do it. Because most of the people who would probably be working on that team are now working on Anthem.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with too.
Huge. Like, yeah. That seems like a giant undertaking. And for that to be a new IP that they're putting out there, and Anthem's going to be the game of the next couple years that everyone looks at and is just like, all right, this seems too good to be true. When does the bad news really start to come in? When are we going to start to see gameplay that doesn't look as good as its first showing, you know? And I feel like with that, yeah, you've got to take the best talent that you got and kind of throw everyone at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And EA runs a tight ship as far as, you know, publishers go, and they have a lot of projects, and they don't shy away from moving studios around to work on the projects that are the most important to their shareholders and to their bottom line and mm-hmm. their fiscal year. So, I mean, I don't think that it's all bad. Hopefully the people that were at the studio aren't going to lose their jobs, that they'll be able to work on other things. But it's for fans out there. I even got my Mass Effect Andromeda Loot Crate Special Edition today. Super late. I don't know why I just arrived today. But I got like super excited about it. I was like, oh yeah, I should go back and play that game. Mm. Nope.
So from a business standpoint, though, do you think this is a good decision? Like, do you think that Mass Effect Andromeda left such a bad taste in the majority of people's mouths that it's not worth putting out single-player DLC?
Yes, I've had to be an apologist for it since it came out. And I also was very vocal about its weaknesses, but it had a lot of great strengths as well. This wasn't a bad game. It just had some major issues. Overall, would I go back and play this game start to finish again? Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yes. Hmm. Because
you and Andy, big fans.
Yeah, it's. I think it got an unfair rap, and perhaps that's just me as a fan speaking very passionately about a franchise that has been really important to me over, you know, the last several years. But I think it's a bad decision for them to abandon this franchise. And I don't know what them taking away single player DLC is going to mean for the franchise going forward. I still have friends of mine that are actively playing the multiplayer, and it's definitely better than the multiplayer in Mass Effect 3. But if you were going to pick DLC to spend production resources on, why would you not do single-player DLC? That just doesn't make sense to me that you would put those resources into multiplayer DLC.
For a game like Mass Effect.
Right, exactly. Which is, you know, people play Mass Effect for its campaign and the RPG aspects of that game, not for, you know, a co-op wave-based multiplayer PvP
exactly.
or whatever.
You know, so looking into this, they bring up the potential sequel a little bit, and there's nothing confirmed one way or the other on that. But in terms of the DLC, the single player DLC not happening, do you think that that is a sign towards them maybe shifting to the next Mass Effect not being part of the Andromeda series, but being maybe another different thing, or maybe trying to figure it out how to shoehorn it into the original trilogy somehow?
I doubt they're going to revisit the original trilogy. The way that they left the ending of Andromeda certainly sets it up for a follow-up or two. There's a lot going on in this world that they, you know, spent a lot of years developing, creating these new places, these new environments, this new race, this whole new cast of characters. It would be a tragic waste if they didn't continue that story. I hope they do, but I don't think we're going to see it for quite some time. Clearly, the team is working on Anthem. We already know that they're working on the next Dragon Age. They've already talked about that publicly. So BioWare is a big studio and they have multiple branches, but they're not that big.
Yeah.
Right? So I have to imagine that if they're going to work on Mass Effect again, it's not going to be for a couple of years at the earliest.
Mm. What's your read on Anthem?
It's really early to tell. I like the idea. I like the idea of like a space opera, Star Wars-y sci-fi instead of the super hardcore sci-fi. You know, that story
instead
kind of
like the military soldier side. It's more of just,
right.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I like that. From a storytelling perspective, I think that it's going to make for really great characters. The combat is something that I would need to see a lot of.
Mm.
Clearly, combat isn't BioWare's strength. They don't do it terribly. It's perfectly adequate. Mm-hmm. But this game feels like combat's going to be a major focus based off the short gameplay snippet that we saw at E3. And I just need to see more. I'm excited, of course, because I love shared world MMO. I love RPG. I love BioWare. It's like checking all the boxes for me, but I can't get too excited until they give me the goods.
Yeah, it's so interesting because seeing that gameplay demo, it really blew my mind. I was so impressed by it, and I am the opposite of what you just said. The open world, multiplayer games, totally not into that. Even the Mass Effect games, I just couldn't get into them either, just because they just felt a little bit too big to me, and I felt like all the decisions stressed me out more than anything.
Oh, that's so
Whereas
sad.
I feel like the Telltale type story games,
right,
they're so small and contained that I'm like, okay, cool, I can handle this. And I understand that I'm in the minority in that everyone loves Mass Effect. But seeing Anthem, I'm like, oh man, they got me. Like, this looks too cool for me not to be interested. And I like that. I like that it looks cool enough for me to step out of my comfort zone and to want to give it a shot. And especially hearing that it's a bit more similar to Destiny and all that, I'm like, oh, that's even more stuff that I don't personally love. But I'm very excited for it. I can't wait to hear more. And I hope that we start to hear things soon.
Yes.
And when do you think is the next time we're going to hear about it?
I would guess probably not until next year.
Yeah.
There is an outside chance that maybe they'll be doing some kind of a partnership with PlayStation and we could get a cool trailer at PSX.
That would be exciting.
That would be awesome. But it's doubtful, I think.
And even then, that's close enough to 2018 that it's like, it's right there.
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to nip in the bud the idea that Anthem is a Destiny like lookalike. Destiny is like its own thing.
I'm saying in terms of the multiplayer experience.
Right, the shared world.
Yeah, exactly. So, in differentiating from Mass Effect, I meant.
Exactly.
Second story. The original director has submitted ideas for Shadow of the Colossus remake. This is from IGN. Fumito Ueda, the director of the original Shadow of the Colossus, submitted a proposal with ideas for changing the upcoming remake of the beloved PS2 classic. Ueda discussed the upcoming PS4 remake in an interview with Eurogamer via a translator, noting he doesn't know if any of his suggestions will be carried out for the game. Quote, I transmitted my petition about the content and tuning, but I don't know the implementation will be what I told, he explained. The translator then clarified, adding, it's he who wants to change something, but he doesn't know if it's possible to change all the things he wants to change. Ueda refrained from detailing what those suggestions were, noting that, quote, if I say one thing and in the final version that thing's not included, it's a problem. While the initial plan was to have more Colossi in the original Shadow of the Colossus, the number of bosses was cut to 16. While some have speculated that the PS4 remake could add in a few more of the hulking creatures, Ueda dashed hopes of that happening. Quote, in this game, there are 16 enemies and there's a story about 16 enemies, he explained. So to change this history, I don't think about changing this history. It's finished with 16 enemies. It's okay. I love translations of things. It's just like, that's such a great message. I am so excited for this game. I think it is important for this to happen. Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games of all time. Definitely one of my favorite PlayStation 2 games. And I feel like it got stuck in history because of the controls. And it turned so many people off that should love the game. And I feel like this remake is going to give it a chance. And I think with all the Last Guardian, you know, debauchery that's went on over the last couple years.
Debauchery, just
the shenanigans, just the ridiculousness of how long the game took to come out. Like, did you like Last Guardian at all?
I didn't finish it.
So I finished it, and it was a slog to get through. I loved it. It was just way too long, and it felt way too much like an old game. And that's the biggest problem, because there's so much heart there, so much character, and that's why I love Shadow of the Colossus. It was way tighter of an experience, but it just doesn't hold up. Like, I tried playing through the HD remaster that came out a couple years ago, and I was just like, oh man, like this, I remember it feeling a lot better than this does. So the idea of them
fixing the standard that is stuff, so much higher now, exactly. Right? I appreciate your enthusiasm. Clearly, The Last Guardian also had a bunch of enthusiasm, but then the game came out and everyone was like, wah, wah. You know?
Yeah.
The problem is that a lot of these older games just don't hold up. And we don't know how deeply PlayStation is going to revamp the mechanics. And it's also surprising to me that so many studios are digging deep into their vaults to bring games back. I know you're super excited about Crash. And from what I've played and what I've seen of Crash, it looks like they did an excellent job with it. But unless they are going to devote the resources to really doing it right, I'm kind of the mindset, like, why even bother? Like, why do this at all? I mean, I feel like they kind of misstepped a little with The Last Guardian, that they had the opportunity to really improve upon that formula, and they didn't. And they had so long to work on that game.
Yeah.
And so that makes me really hesitant about getting excited about this remake, because, like, is it going to be just another Last Guardian?
Well, see, what makes me excited about this is Ueda's not part of it. So the guy that directed Last Guardian isn't doing, he's like trying to give the suggestions. So I'm right. Like, okay, cool. Great. Like, Blue Point, I have full faith in them. They did such a good job with the Uncharted collection. And while that was just a straight port and the Crash thing, that was a great job of them doing a remake that is true to the originals. But it sounds like the intent from everything that Shuhei's been talking about with the Shadow of Colossus remake, it is trying to improve upon and modernize the controls, at the very least, of the gameplay. Because I feel like that's really the only thing that was antiquated about the original. The story's great, the music's great, the atmosphere's great, the bosses are awesome, like the gameplay's great. It's just the controls are cumbersome. So I feel like they know that, and they will fix it. And so that's why I think it's a bit more realistic for me to be excited about this and actually think it's going to be good than something like Crash, which I understand it's a much more personal, I just like that thing.
It's not just you. A lot of people are excited.
It's getting great reviews, which kind of blows my mind. I think people are reviewing it higher than I would even review it, because I'm just like, oh, guys, it's not that good. Like, you know, calm yourselves. But, you know.
Well, I won't try to damper your enthusiasm too much. I'll just believe it when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Make me a believer.
Speaking of believing things when we see things, our third and final story of the day, Shenmue 3 gets an updated logo and announces footage plans. Developer EaseNet has revealed a fresh logo for Shenmue 3 at the same time as teasing some new announcements coming soon. In an update on the game's official website, the developer said it took fans' comments into consideration when designing the new logo. Elsewhere in the blog post, EaseNet said it will attend Gamescom 2017 in Germany, where it will show its newest movie clips, share the latest updates, and even make some new announcements. In a recent development update, series creator Yu Suzuki announced that Shenmue 3 had been delayed until 2018. The game previously had a tentative December 2017 release date that we all knew would never actually happen. But in an update to Kickstarter backers, Suzuki said more time is needed to fully realize his vision. Quote, by utilizing new technologies, we have been able to discover new possibilities and expressions, he explained. In many ways, the game has become bigger and more beautiful than I initially expected. We do, however, need more time to deliver the game to you. In order to achieve the game concept you supported and my 16-year-long personal dream, we have revised the development schedule. We're moving ahead with a plan to release the game in the second half of 2018.
So Q1 2019?
I know. Right? Let's just keep pushing it out there. I am happy that they are saying that there will be stuff at Gamescom. I think that them missing E3 obviously said a lot, but I'm happy they at least put out this update, you know, letting people know what's going on. So it's not this just this kind of weird thing where, okay, here's the game's announced as a Kickstarter. Bye.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see you in a couple of years. Like, I'm happy that he is being a bit more upfront with the community that is supporting him. I'm not a Shenmue guy myself, but I know there are millions of people out there that are super stoked about this. And this is one of those games where I'm like, take your time, like get it right. At the same time, get it out.
Yeah.
You know,
don't take Final Fantasy 15 years.
Absolutely not. No, but like get this thing out, because or else it'll have the same problem Last Guardian did, which was the development cycle just takes way too long. And by the time the game comes out, it feels like a game from 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And fans who backed this game are super pumped for it. I think Gamescom is an interesting choice to debut new stuff. I would think that maybe PSX would be a better place. But, you know, Sony changes up their PR strategy quite frequently, keeps everybody on their toes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how far along they are, what they show, if they show like a gameplay demo or if they just show cutscenes or if they're just going to do like concept art. It doesn't really say what we're going to get or how much we're going to get. But
we'll get the newest movie clips.
Movie clips. So that probably cinematics.
Is that cinematic? I mean, is that, or is it just a bunch of like a screenshot, like slideshow, you know?
That's a great question.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see. But again, get excited about it. It reminds me of Kingdom Hearts 3, where they gave the updated announcements about updates coming last year, when they're like, oh, in winter, by the end of this year, there'll be something. And then it never came. And then now it's like, now we're waiting for D23, which I'm really excited about.
Just a couple weeks away.
I really wonder what we're going to get in there. Because, man.
Probably nothing.
Probably nothing. But, I mean, the fact that they released that E3 trailer talking about this next trailer, it's like, okay.
Technically, it wasn't an E3 trailer.
Whatever.
Technically, it wasn't.
Yeah, but I mean,
They made a big show about putting it out at the concert instead of that, during E3.
The concert that happened across the street from E3.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Like the on day -2 of E3. Whatever. Video games are stupid sometimes, but I love them.
That's true.
All right, now it's time for the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every day. Out today. The big one. Crash Bandicoot. Insane Trilogy. Kevin, why would you cut when I'm looking at this one? You just messed me up so bad.
I thought you were done.
No.
Tim, you can
Crash
handle this.
Crash Bandicoot.
You can do it.
Is out. And I'm very, very excited about it. I've been playing it all weekend. I cannot wait to get home and play more now. Yesterday, we did our review on Gamescast. You can watch that if you're a Patreon supporter on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames today. And I was just like talking to Greg and to our boy Cheeks, Double D Doherty. And he was talking about how close he is to platinuming it. I've never platinumed a game, ever. Not a trophy guy. Not into that stuff. It motivated me. And I started playing last night. I'm like, I think I need to do this. I think I need 3 platinums in it. I'm like, maybe I'll just do 1. I almost have it in Warped. So I feel like if I just dedicate some time, I can make this happen. Are you going to play this game at all?
Yes, of course. I'm definitely not going to platinum it, but I'm going to try it out and see how it goes. I didn't spend very much time with the original games, but Vicarious Visions really did a nice job with this trilogy.
I'm so impressed with the work they put in. They obviously care so much to get it right and to treat the franchise with, some would say, more respect than it even deserves. Like, they did a really good job of understanding the target audience for this remake, and everything from the sound to the visuals to the voice actors. Like, they got all the original voice actors back except for the ones that have died in real life. So it's like they did a really good job of treating it with care, and I'm loving it. If I have any advice for you though,
yes,
if you don't have real nostalgia for the original games, jump into 2 before you play 1.
Skip one.
You can come back to it if you are so thrilled that you love it, but 2 is the one that is actually a great game.
Okay.
And I think that I would say it's like the Uncharted 2 or the Assassin's Creed 2 of the series, where the first one, it's great, but the second one's that much better. The difference is it's not story-based at all, so you're not really losing out on anything. The problem with 1 is it has a lot of pacing issues, especially early on, where so many of the early levels are just stupid difficult in a frustrating way, not in a challenging way. And I feel like it's very off-putting to people, and that's going to leave a bad taste in the mouth of what Crash Bandicoot is
capable
of.
That's very good advice. I don't want to ask you too many questions because you guys spoke about it on the Gamescast, but...
Yeah, you can.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I can talk about Crash all day.
So I know that. So I've talked to the team a couple of times about this game, and they said that to help players like me who didn't play a lot of Crash, that they put in like hints and better communication about how to take on boss fights and things like that. Do you think it's too much? Are you, as a longtime Crash fan, are you like, now they've made it too easy?
Oh, God, no. It doesn't make the game any easier. It makes it understandable how to play. Like, I feel like the original Crash, there were certain things that you literally had to look at the instruction manual to even know. I feel like all that they did in this game was kind of, now there's enemies where before you would look at it and you're like, is that fire on his head or is it just, is his head just orange?
Yeah.
You know? And then you would have to, it was like trial and error figuring out what his weak points were or whatever. Now it's like, oh, I clearly can't touch that. You know, so it's things like that. It just telegraphs it. It just makes the game better. And honestly, I don't think that the game's any easier than the original one in terms of design. It's only easier in the sense that you're not going to die as much because the controls are tighter. So before it was just bullshit. It wasn't like it was hard.
Right.
You know, it was like more frustrating. It still is frustrating. There's still a lot of cheap deaths, still a lot of platforms that I'm like, why would you set it up this way? Like it's a little backwards in design. But then by two, they really, I think, knock it out of the park. So highly recommend it. Check it out. $40. Also out today, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, the Master Trials DLC pack with the Champion's Ballad coming later this year.
And that's the one with the Tingle outfit, right?
You get some outfits, you get the Majora's Mask, you get a lot of stuff. The cool thing for me, there's hard Heroes Mode, Hard Mode, but it's the Trials that I'm actually interested in. I love the idea of it kind of being like the Horde mode with Zelda. I've been out of Breath of the Wild long enough that I'm like, all right, cool. You know what? It is time to get back in. I don't necessarily want to replay the game even on a harder difficulty. I feel like they could have added a bit more to entice me to do that. Don't need to just do it again.
Go back and replay open world games from the beginning.
Yeah.
Maybe do redo certain sections, but I'm looking forward to really sinking a bunch of time in with this game. I'm bringing my Switch on my trip.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of long flights and long train rides ahead of me. So
it's an exciting time.
I even got the special USB charging cable that I need.
Yeah. So you're set.
Yeah.
Man, the Switch on planes is just like, I just want to fly now. It's fantastic. Next game, Micro Machines World Series, coming out on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. You ever play with Micro Machines?
Yes.
I love Micro Machines.
They're great. So much
fun. I loved the Micro Machines game on the Nintendo 64. A lot of fond memories of that. N64, you know, there's just like all those games you'd rent from Blockbuster, and there's like multiplayer modes that are kind of broken, but are just fun to just mess around with. Micro Machines.
This one actually looks pretty fun. Yeah. I was more of a Hot Wheels girl back in the day.
Makes sense.
But I did have Micro Machines, and this game, the co-op in it looks like it'd make for some good party times.
Mm-hmm. Tokyo Xanadu coming to PlayStation 4 and that there, PlayStation Vita. Greg's not here, but he'd be proud. Area Deluxe Edition coming out on PS4, and then Lawbreakers Open Beta is now free on PC. You play any Lawbreakers?
I have played it. I haven't played a lot of it recently, and the game has changed quite dramatically since the last time I played it. So I'm looking forward to getting into this. I might wait until it comes to PS4, which I believe is August, because I'm just really terrible at WASD FPS games.
Mm-hmm.
Just never bothered to get learn. Good.
Yeah.
I spent all of my time practicing and learning how to do dual stick for FPS, and now I'm like, do I want to go back and learn WASD? I mean, I know it would make me a better player, but I'm just so lazy.
Yeah, no, that makes it. For me, it's always like the weird, like the pinky stuff. I'm like, I can get the just the directions, yeah. But it's all the other stuff. I'm like, I can't even do it.
Yeah.
And I'm just bad at games, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, you just got to practice, and I just don't want to.
And some new dates to games have been added. Watch Dogs 2 Party Mode. It's a 4-player co-op DLC coming July 4th for free. So check it out. I want to do a party mode of Party Mode in Watch Dogs. I think that could be a lot of fun. You like Watch Dogs 2?
I did like it. That's another game that I didn't spend enough time with. Open world games are just so daunting. You can only really do one every once in a while, at least for me. I enjoy spending my time in them, but there's just too many of them now.
Yeah.
Everybody feels like they need to make their game open world. And I appreciate that the tech is now at a place where more games can become open world and they're not, you know, as full of glitches or bugs or things like that. But not every game needs to be open world. It's completely okay if you want to limit that experience and then maybe just add DLC or things like that. Like, I don't need to go collect items or do fetch quests or drive around and explore. Like, I don't need to do that in every single environment.
I wonder when the trend's kind of going to shift and when we're going to start to see open world games stop being the biggest thing where there's 12 of them coming out a year.
You know, that's a great question. I don't know when we're going to see that shift because so far they've all been doing pretty okay when you think about sales. I can't think of the last open world game that truly tanked.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could maybe consider Andromeda an open world game to a certain extent.
Yeah. I'd say it's a little bit different though. I think maybe the trend's already shifting towards games like Division and more that style, or even like the Ghost Recon Wildlands style, where it's a bit more of the I forgot what we were talking about it yesterday with the like the online always on not always online the someone let me know in the you're wrong thing what I'm talking about, the online service games, live service
live games,
that I think that maybe we're already kind of seeing the shift over there where it's like they're still open world but like that's kind of the trending thing that everybody wants to have in their marketing spiel and
well
all
absolutely
that.
It gives the publishers an opportunity to continually sell you new stuff to keep you coming back to play in the game. I mean, and I've spent plenty of my own money buying stuff in live games because I enjoy them, but every game can't be a live game. The mechanics of what you're doing in the world and the characters and everything need to make sense for a live game. And I think we're seeing some people trying to maybe fit a square peg in a round hole just to make to check the live box, but hopefully it doesn't become problematic.
Exactly. Also, Blizzard announced StarCraft Remastered will be out on August 14th for $15. It was previously announced it was coming. Now we have a date. The game also includes the Brood War expansion in addition to the native widescreen aspect ratio and 4K support. All the artwork and visual assets have been redone to match the high resolution transformation. Players can swap between old school and HD visuals on the fly by pressing F5 for a real nostalgia trip. All the audio from music to voice lines have been refined as well, upgraded to 44 kilohertz frequency for higher quality, and single player cutscenes also received the HD treatment.
Are you excited about this?
No, I played StarCraft 1. That was the only game. I beat it, just the campaign, but I never played online and couldn't do any of that stuff. Not good at it. I love the game, though. It's super fun. It's available free. If you don't want the HD one, you can just download it right now. So, yeah. What about you?
I only played StarCraft 2, but I enjoy watching the masterful art form that is StarCraft PvP.
Yeah.
I am not capable of being good at it at all, but like I like watching pros play because there's just so much going on at the same time, and watching them be able to manage all of the different things happening at the same time is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Also incredibly complicated. So it's no surprise that this game has really held up over many, many years.
I love this type of remaster. $15, and with all this sounds like another thing where it is really for the fans, and all these are just great improvements, and having it be widescreen aspect ratio and stuff, that's awesome. And I love that you can switch back and forth on the fly. That's something that Crash Bandicoot I wish had. I don't like that the original games aren't in the remastered, and it's just the remastered versions. I'm sure there's some licensing and some other stuff going on.
Probably was more of like a technological thing that the games might not have been able to function on the new hardware.
I mean, that there's no way. I mean, they obviously can because Crash 1 was in Uncharted 4.
Well, I mean,
a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Crash 1 wasn't. A tiny little snippet of a demo was in there, right? That they probably custom made.
I still don't understand how PS1 classics aren't on PS4. What is it? And Virtual Console not on Switch yet?
Let's track down Sean Layden and be like, what's going on?
Buddy. What you doing, man? Call of Duty Infinite Warfare Absolution coming first to PlayStation 4 on July 6th. Activision and Infinity Ward have unveiled the first official details of Call of Duty Infinity Warfare Absolution, the third DLC pack for 2016's number one top-selling console video game in the United States.
You probably didn't need to put all that in there.
The map pack features four new diverse multiplayer maps and a new zombies co-op experience called Attack of the Radioactive Thing, set in a 50s era beach town where a government science experiment has gone horribly wrong. Absolution is scheduled to release July 6th, first on the PSN, and other platforms will follow soon. You going to get back in for that?
You know, I was really excited when they announced the Call of Duty Zombie Chronicles, where they put all of the zombie experiences together. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't been able to get anybody to play with me. It's like, I feel like Call of Duty has a bad reputation among people who work in the video game business, who work in video games media. Whenever I talk to my friends who I play with online that also work in games, they always just like kind of like scoff when I talk about Call of Duty. I'm like, there's a reason it's the number one game in the world. Like, you can hate on it if you want.
Yeah.
But like what Activision has done with that franchise, I think is really incredible. So yeah, I am going to play it, Tim.
Yeah, you do that. I know that the single player gets a lot of love from the industry, from the people that do play it. But yeah, the multiplayer does tend to just kind
of, I think it's mostly because most of us who attempt to play COD multiplayer just get wrecked.
Yeah.
And we never want to admit that we're bad at something. Mm, so then people are just like, it sucks.
Yeah, and when you see something over and over and over, it's kind of easy to write it off as always being the same. And I think that even it gets to the point where I feel like a lot of the people in the industry aren't playing Call of Duty, and their thoughts of Call of Duty are based on Modern Warfare 2. And they haven't played any of the other ones, but the fact that they have happened every year just kind of like makes them go, eh, it's just more of the same. The same way we write off Madden or write off Mario or whatever. It's like,
no one's writing off Mario, Tim. Come on.
Yeah. Well, there's millions of people that are. They do that because they're just like, oh, the 20th Mario game. And it's just like, I mean, they're pretty different, you know, when you're comparing 3D World to Galaxy to Sunshine, whatever. But Call of Duty is the same way, is my point.
Yes.
Now it's time for deals of the day. This one, if you want to switch, you better act now. It's probably already gone as the time we're saying this. ThinkGeek has a new supply of consoles available to order now. The retailer is selling an array of Switch bundles on its website, and that's where they get you. It's only a bunch of bundles with some shit you probably don't want. The bundles range from $420 to $610. And each comes with a console, a copy of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and additional pieces of Zelda merchandise, such as Legend of Zelda, Arts and Artifacts art book, and other collectibles. You can find the full list of bundles on thinkgeek.com if they're still available. What does it look like?
So they all say pre-order, which is weird. So I'll pick the cheapest one, which comes with a Zelda watch.
Okay. Okay. So you know what time it is?
Let me see if I can pre-order. Oh, it says coming late July 2017. Purchase limited to one per customer. Add to order. I'm going to try to put it in my cart. Shipping info. Hey, it's letting me go through with the purchase. Well, I
mean, maybe that's like a second round then, if you're pre-ordering the second round.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like these were available to order.
Every single one on the website says pre-order.
Okay. Well, you lost your chance. Sorry about that. Next up in deals of the day, the Xbox Ultimate Game Sale has begun from GameSpot right on schedule. The massive Xbox Live Ultimate Game Sale has started today, June 30th. The sale pretty much lives up to its name, featuring deals on more than 350 games, hardware, and accessories spanning the Xbox Store, the Windows Store, the Microsoft Store, and all those places. For the game deals, Xbox Live Gold members can enjoy discounts of up to 70%, while everyone else can take advantage of offers up to 60%. Some of the titles discounted in the Ultimate Game Sale include Battlefield 1 for just $30, BioShock Collection for $36, Call of Duty Black Ops 3 Gold Edition for $36, Dark Souls 3 for $30, Dead Rising 4 for $36, Deus Ex Human Revolution for just $19.80. Other Xbox One deals include Fallout 4 for $22.50, Far Cry 4 for $20, For Honor for $42, Gears of War 4 for $30, Halo 5 Guardians for $20, Resident Evil 7 for $42, and The Witcher 3 Complete Edition for $30. For the full list, you can check out Major Nelson's blog. What a damn sale.
That's some pretty good deals, actually.
Yeah, of like games that didn't come out too long ago.
Yeah, pretty much every game on this list is a great game.
Yeah, so very exciting. And it sounds like there's way more with over 350. So definitely check that out. Get on it. Now it's time for reader mail. This comes from Flying Wombat. It's obvious that everyone is wondering what Rocksteady has been up to since their last Batman game. Most people seem to be speculating that it will be another DC title, whether it be Superman or Justice League. However, a few years back, there was the rumor that they were working on a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, which I think was an amazing idea. Going for the more gritty comic style vibe, I think a lot would translate well from Batman. Plus, they could use the sewers in each character's variation to change up the playstyle. What are your thoughts on this, or do you truly think it's a sure thing that will remain true to DC?
Well, given Rocksteady's close ties with Warner Brothers, it's very likely that they're going to stay in the DC family. I think a really gritty Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game would be fantastic. So awesome. We haven't had a good Turtles game in a long time.
God, mutants in Manhattan. What the hell went wrong? It looked so good. I was so devastated by that last year. No pun intended. Because
you didn't really think that game was going to be excellent.
Yes, I did. Because Transformers Devastation was excellent.
Okay, that's fair.
It blew my mind. That's the thing, is it came out in a weird time where it was right around Platinum releasing all the games where it's like, they could do no wrong. Oh, wait, they can do wrong. Oh, shit, they're doing a lot of wrong, right? Right? And yeah. Legend of Korra happened and people were really upset about it.
Right.
But then they put out Transformers and I was like, wait a minute, this looks just like the 1980s cartoon. Oh man, they're getting all the original voice actors. Oh cool, this story sounds interesting. Oh, the gameplay looks great. This action is like unlike anything I could ever imagine from a Transformers game. And then I played it, I'm like, they didn't shit the bed. This is actually good.
Not bad.
I can't believe it. And then Ninja Turtles happens and I'm like, oh man, it's going to be just like Transformers. This is going to be great. I'll never forget playing it at GDC a couple years ago. And I was like, oh no, this is really bad.
Yeah, so bad they pulled it from digital stores.
Man, and I understand why. And it sucks too, because everything going into that game sounded great. It was based off the IDW comic series, which is my favorite iteration of Ninja Turtles ever. So I'm like, how did they fuck it up? But they just got the gameplay. It's totally wrong. The camera was atrocious and it was glitchy as hell. And there was so many sound issues where it's like different audio files wouldn't play at the right time. And it like ruined the experience.
I'm sorry, Tim.
Yeah. What's really upsetting though is I remember when this Rocksteady rumor first started and I was so excited about it because that sounded like everything we could want from a Ninja Turtles game. And I feel like it would take a developer like Rocksteady to make that happen and do it right and treat it with care. Because the last Ninja Turtles game we got that also tried to do this more dark, gritty thing was Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, which was a downloadable game last gen on 360 and PS3. And that was one of the ones that wasn't based on the movie, but came out around it. And they also had weird looking faces, and didn't have noses and shit. And it was just like another example of almost, but no, you totally missed the mark.
Yeah, it's frustrating when publishers who own these really big licenses put out what I would consider a really crappy piece of software just to retain the license. So part of these deals usually involves them having to put out a game X amount of years. So that's why we saw so many crappy Spider-Man games, right? And now we're finally getting a fantastic game from Insomniac. And hopefully there's still time to salvage the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game legacy, because there used to be some really great Turtles games. And, you know, I would like to see Rocksteady work on something different than a DC superhero game. I thought they obviously hit it out of the park with Arkham, like probably the up on the pedestal best
superhero
series.
Video game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to see them try something a little bit different. I mean, they can still keep it in the action adventure genre, of course. They do combat so excellently. But this is kind of an exciting idea. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole because then I'll get really excited. And then Rocksteady will come out and be like, oh, we're making a Superman game. And I'll be like, oh, okay, fine.
I mean, it's really interesting to think about what Rocksteady could be doing. There was all those rumors about the Damian Wayne Batman game, and that's interesting, but it is just more Batman. I feel like we've already seen so much of that.
They said they were done with Batman.
Yeah, but you know, I don't trust it until I see what the next thing that they're working on is, because there has been so many rumors backing up things in different ways. There's been rumors for a long time about the Justice League, and then there was those Suicide Squad things, which thank God that doesn't sound like it's happening. I do think that it'll be a DC hero of some sort. A Superman game would be interesting, but I don't think that's what they're working on. What would be really interesting is if they were working on a Marvel thing. That'd be some crazy switcheroo shit. But yeah, what you bring up a good point about the WB ties, where I don't think that they would do that. But with Marvel games going as hard as they are, who knows?
That would be a major poach if they took Rocksteady away from Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
I highly doubt that would happen.
But no matter what, I'm excited to see what they do next. Next question comes from Brody. With the existence of the PlayStation 4 Pro and the Xbox One X that have appeared midway through a console generation, do you think we would ever see a console and its Pro version release at the same time? E.g. PS5 and PS5 Pro are released on the same day. I don't think under that guise, right? We've seen it before where, like when PlayStation 3 launched, there was the different versions where one had backwards compatibility and one didn't, and there was all these little changes. I could see that happening again. But at the same time, I also think that the hardware guys have got wise to the fact that you should probably just focus on one message and try to get one thing out there so we can produce one, you know, thing to sell and focus on. And I think it also makes sense for them to have something exciting to be able to announce 2 years down the line when it's like, now here's the new one if you want it, but you don't need it.
Yeah, I don't know why you would want to potentially split your consumer base that way. And really more from a software perspective, how would you promote which game on which platform? Like you said, the messaging would get really muddy and really confusing. It was confusing enough, I think, for PlayStation last year when they had the Slim and the Pro out within like 2 months of each other. Mm-hmm. And then they had the PSVR on top of that. Yeah. And people were like, well, should I get the Slim with PSVR or should I get the Pro? And obviously Pro was designed to work with PSVR. And I think that alone was a good lesson for PlayStation to look at and say, maybe we don't want to release three separate pieces of hardware in a 3 month period ever again.
Yeah.
And as we get closer for these technologies kind of eventually getting to match what's happening on PC, I think we're going to see some of these more budget boxes maybe fall away because people are going to want to continue to push the technology forward. At least, I mean, if you look at enthusiasm press out there and what people are talking about, what people are excited about, like no one's like talking about how they're super pumped to go get the PS4 Slim, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And what's interesting there is the lowest common denominator idea, where it's like going forward, whenever you make games, you need to think about Xbox One S and Xbox One X, PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 Pro. And when it comes to next gen, I wonder where that's going to be. Like, there is a big question of, will there even be a next gen? I think the answer is yes.
Of course.
And that's something that people are going to keep asking forever until it doesn't exist. But I wonder, will there be a PlayStation 6? You know, will there be a next gen, or will it finally hit that point where they figure out maybe earlier on some type of modular system similar to a PC that makes sense for how people are used to buying hardware in 2017 and beyond? I think that phones obviously are something that people are used to every 2 years getting a new phone and just going through that cycle. I'm sure that Sony and Microsoft are like, how can we get in on that? How can we make it more enticing for a PlayStation 4, but then you also get the Pro, but then you also get the next thing, and keeping pushing the technology further and further, but also making sure that they're not alienating the people that are buying their cheapest things that are selling the best and keeping their numbers high. Like, the reason PlayStation 4 is winning right now is because there's so many of them in the wild. So it's like, you can't just have your Pro system because that comes with a price tag that isn't going to sell those numbers.
No, absolutely. I think having an offering is important, giving people options so they don't have to spend the maximum amount of their budget, you know, to enjoy their hobby. I mean, and it's going to be interesting to see. I appreciate that you brought up the fact that people are looking at the video game market and trying to converge it with what's, you know, happening in the smartphone market. But when you think about people who spend money on an iPhone every year, right? Like, the iPhone's never discounted, no matter what you do. If you're buying a discounted iPhone, it's probably because it's refurbished or it's used or whatever, right? Like, those things are always full price and they don't drop in price until the next one is released. Mm-hmm. And people buy that brand new, like $800 every single year. But you also use it every day, like all day long.
Yeah.
You don't do the same with your console. I mean, some people may use their console every day, but you're not using it all day, every day. You're not taking it with you everywhere you go.
I read an article a couple weeks ago about how, with the iPhone especially, but with smartphones in general, people are upgrading less and less over time because they don't, and I think the reason why is, like, when you look at Apple, it's just the last couple of years, they haven't been bringing the heat.
The differences haven't been there.
Like, last year was the first time I had this phone. It's coming up on 3 years. And that's crazy for me because I want the new thing, but I haven't had any reason to upgrade.
Live photo. You got to get live photo. You can make gifts.
It's waterproof. I'm like, nah, you know? And I feel like that is something that the console guys got lucky with, is that they're coming in, they're able to look at the smartphone model and be like, all right, how can we make this work for us, but not hit a point where we're doing too much? And I mean, it's already an interesting thing of, like, the Xbox One X, there's so many questions of, why does it need to exist besides just being able to say it's the most powerful and just being able for Xbox to have that headline and to be able to own that conversation? But We'll see. I don't know. I think it's going to be a very interesting time. I think the PlayStation 4 Pro got such a bad rap because they did such a shit job presenting the information initially. But I think that now we've seen that all of the hullabaloo that people went through of, oh my God, this is the end. The developers are going to be so upset that they have to make games that work on both things. I'm sure developers are upset about that, but it doesn't seem like it's an issue that I'm hearing about every day. Right. And from the gamer side of things, it's not something that people need to be complaining about constantly. You either have a PlayStation 4 or you have a Pro. And you just kind of forget about it because there's nothing that is like a defining feature that you're like, man, I am missing out on an experience because I don't have a Pro. And if you want that extra stuff, it's there.
Right. As somebody who is now regularly using a Pro and also has a regular PS4, when I switch between them, it is like a noticeable difference though. But if you're only using what you have, you don't see that difference exactly on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I love my PlayStation 4 Pro, but that's because it's connected to a beautiful TV and playing beautiful games like Horizon on it. I'm just like, this is insane. And I'm the type of person that wants things to be, if I know it could be better and I have the means to buy the thing, I'm gonna wanna do that, right? But I also know that playing it on a PlayStation 4, like normal one, it looks great. And without a side-by-side, you're not really missing out on too much.
Exactly. That's why you don't really need 4K, right, guys?
Mitch Krasen says, spurred from the retro discussion yesterday, how much do normal people working at studios get pestered for what they're working on? There has to be tons of people who know their next game, obviously, but I can only imagine how much crap they get trying to get them to leak. Just curious, since I don't know developers at all. I feel like you are going to have some interesting insight on this because you know a lot of people in the industry.
Well, this varies quite widely depending on who the developer is and what they're working on. Certainly, some developers are on incredible lockdown with what they're working on, from like the security measures to get into the building, where the window placement is at the buildings, who has access to what floors. I mean, it all depends on how much money is into the production and how secretive the project needs to be. So it varies quite widely, as I said, but I'm guessing that they know if they talk about their work, they're probably going to lose their job. Yeah. They probably don't want to lose their job, so they don't talk about their work. And anybody that's pressuring somebody who's under a non-disclosure agreement or any other kind of legally binding document to not discuss the work that they're doing has taken that responsibility to say, hey, I signed a legally binding agreement to not talk about it. And if you're pressuring somebody who has signed one of those documents to give up their secrets, like, kind of shame on you.
Absolutely.
Don't be that person.
Yeah, no, and I've seen it a couple times. Like, I don't have too many developer friends, but recently I was down in Austin and I was at a bar and I was with my friends, and one of my friends knew a guy that went to high school with someone. It was one of those long chains, but worked at Retro. No one else in the bar gave a fuck about that. They're not video game people at all. But I looked at him like, are you kidding me?
Can super, we have a drink?
Super excited. We just started talking and he's a super cool guy. And I don't even want to say what he does there, but like, he wouldn't tell me anything, you know? Yeah. And like, of course I wasn't like badgering him of just like, tell me it all. Like, there was the one question of like, is it Metroid? And he's just like, I can't talk about it. I'm like, cool, I respect that. And then we just started talking about games and, you know,
right,
like retro games and games he did work on before, which obviously he is allowed to talk about. But yeah, there's a level of respect that I think needs to come with the conversations you have with these people. And also there's a level of friendship that happens with relationships where it's just like, there are secrets that are told, but then you are now, you have broke the law when it comes to the NDA. You are responsible for anybody that you tell. If it gets out, that could be your job.
Right.
And so you shouldn't be doing that stuff.
Never update your resume.
Yeah, never update your resume. Just stay off LinkedIn. Not a good idea.
I hope someday that we can get to a system that's much more similar to the feature film system where they announce the films way ahead of time and are like, okay, this is being worked on, it's coming out in like 5 years or 6 years or whatever down the road, and that way, like, there's not this pressure to not talk about it. I will say, like, some of these big reveals about games, I mean, the Fallout 4 reveal was really fantastic. Obviously that there was plenty of leaks that, you know, we, Bethesda was working coming on it, but like, when they were going to announce it and the fact that it was so far down the pipeline and that it was going to be released in just a few months was super exciting. Those moments are great, but being able to create those moments is so few and far between in an era where we live in a society where you can share anything instantly.
Yeah.
And so trying to keep those secrets is becoming harder and harder every year. And I just would rather them not have that pressure. Announce the game, get the name out there, and then let the developers, you know, work in peace.
See, I like the crazy announcements, and I feel like it's a good on you if you keep the surprise, because when that moment happens, it's awesome. But I also appreciate what you're saying of the more longer run games. I know a lot of people look at things like Death Stranding or Last of Us 2 and they're like, why would you tell us this early? And I'm like, because not every game needs to be Fallout 4. I think there needs to be more Fallout 4s. I love the idea of this game's announced and it's coming out now. But I also think that there's something good for the industry to have things to look forward to and to have these big projects that you know are not coming this year, you know are not coming next year, but you're excited to keep getting information on it. Now, that does eventually hit a wall with Square Enix where it's just like, stop, you know, don't do this. But
yeah, I mean, they're not the only ones that are guilty. I mean, how many times did Ubisoft show the original Watch Dogs before that game finally came out?
Yeah, but even that I think is a little bit different, because that they got out there to show what next gen could look like, you know. And I think that I appreciated them trying to do that and trying to be like, yo, we're trying to do something different when it comes to the PS4 and Xbox One. And seeing that demo for the first time, that like was the talk of E3,
but that wasn't what the game was.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's, I mean, that is very true, and like that is, a lot of people can be and should be upset about the game that they ended up playing, but maybe that's what just tech demos are for, and that's why I don't call it Watch Dogs.
Yeah, but like what they did with Beyond Good and Evil 2 this year.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a tech demo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
That wasn't like a gameplay demo, in case you didn't know.
Beyond Good and Evil 2, to me, I am on the other side of it, where it's just like, I think that is a game that has been way too long, where you cannot make that announcement after all of the wait for it. It's been announced before, you know? So it's like, coming out with a tech demo now, it's like, no.
No,
now this should have been a game.
I was so excited sitting in the audience at that press conference when that demo came. I knew instantly what that game was. And I was... As the fan in me was so pumped, but then when I heard about what they were showing behind closed doors, I was like, I got deflated so instantly. I was like, no, what? Yeah. How are you telling me that you don't have something that's hands-on playable, that's not a demo, like not a tech demo, that's an actual level in the game that you've been building? I know they took a break in making that game for quite a long time, but they said they've been working on it for at least 3 years. Like, what have you built then? Yeah. Show us that.
Greg had a really interesting observation when it comes to the Vivendi takeover, that he thinks that the reason they announced it at the C3 was just to like get it out there and to kind of build faith in the Ubisoft brand and get that passion and love for why Ubisoft is different and why Ubisoft needs to remain what it is.
Yeah, family run.
Yeah, so I think that is interesting, but still, it is kind of a bummer. I'm so excited for Beyond Good and Evil 2, but... I don't like how they announced that. Finally, we're going to end the show with Squad Up. This is a segment where the best friends out there can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and squad up and play with your friends all over the world on any console playing any game. Today, Jonathan Humphreys wants to find some people to play games with him. He says, I play squad games like GTA 5, Warframe, etc., but have almost no friends on my platform. Can someone please join with me so we can squad up? He is on the Xbox One and his gamer tag is Binaural Stone 69. Binaural Stone 69. Interesting name.
It is an interesting name.
Interesting name. And now, Andrea, can you tell us what we've been wrong about today?
Yeah, let's take a look at what we've got. Okay, Tim.
Yes.
I want to point this out because people keep saying this when it's actually quite untrue. Absolutely none of the original Crash Bandicoot voice actors have returned for this game. And yes, I've checked and made sure. What this misconception stems from is the fact that many of the actors return from the Mind Over Mutant series, such as Jess Harnell and Maurice LaMarc.
And Twinsanity and all those.
But the original voice actors, such as Brendan O'Brien and Clancy Brown, have not been in the series since Wrath of Cortex.
Yeah. And that makes sense. But also to keep in mind is there wasn't much voice acting.
Right.
Like in the OG stuff. So yeah, but yes, you are absolutely correct.
All right. Tim, the name of the genre you were thinking of was game as a service or shared world games. So we talked about that. Go. I think live service games is probably
Live service games is what we talked about yesterday.
Andrea, League of Legends is actually the biggest game in the world. And as for FPS games, it's CSGO. If we're talking console games and people playing, GTA 5 is the biggest console game. I don't know. I actually don't know if you're correct. So
about
I'm
League?
Going to no about all of these stats. So I'm going to look them up and make sure.
Let's fucking do it.
And I will. I know that we're not.
You're wrong. You're wrong.
I know we're not on next week, but I don't know if these are correct. Also, like if you're gonna do a you're wrong correction that's about numbers, bring the numbers.
Bring the heat. Bring the numbers. Those numbers do sound wrong, right, though, to me.
They sound right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They sound right.
Because, I mean, well, just thinking about it, like CSGO on PC.
But Activision wouldn't be able to call Call of Duty the number one entertainment franchise in the world if it wasn't bigger. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about total units sold? Are we talking about monthly active users? Are we talking about total registered users? Are we talking about units shipped? These are important distinctions that we need to make.
They are. Yeah. Okay. Let's look into this. Let's bring the when we come back on the show.
Yes.
In 2 weeks or whatever it is.
We'll revisit this. I will look up the numbers. We will find out and we will make sure to
bring justice to the world.
The correction corrected, if necessary.
Yes.
Okay. Tim and Andrea, let's end the Rocksteady status discussion once and for all. This is not a correction. It's not close ties to Warner Brothers. Rocksteady is owned by WB Games, with Square Enix having a minority participation in with 25%. So,
oh, they're owned. I didn't realize that.
Here's the thing. Make no mistake, he says, they are a WB game studio, so no, they won't be making a TMNT or Marvel game. Who has the rights to TMNT? That's a great question.
Hasbro.
Who owns Hasbro?
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 I'm pretty sure Hasbro's the top of that chain.
Let's find out. I will look this up. It might take me a second. Activision grabs the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game license. That was from 2013. So if Activision owns that license, then Warner Brothers is not making a TMNT game. That is correct.
There we go.
All right. Thank you for that correction.
Is there any more?
No.
No, that is it.
That's it.
Oh, thank God. Didn't get too much wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for Kinda Funny Games Daily on this beautiful June 30th. Andrea, thank you for joining me.
Happy birthday again, Tim.
I like it. Never gets old.
You're going to have a wonderful week again. I can feel it.
Oh, I'm about to go home and play some Crash Bandicoot. So that's good. But first, we're going to go get some Gordos, Kevin. Hell yeah, we are. All right. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. I'm about to read all of the subs and tips that were left during this show. You can subscribe to us over on all of the podcast services around the globe. Kinda Funny Games Daily. It's a great show.
When you come back.
In the bag.
Danny O'Dwyer makes his debut.
He does. The team will finally be fully formed. But Greg originally said that Andy was going to be part of this show. I'm sure he'll make an appearance at some point, but he's not going to be like a regular cast member. I just want everyone to know. But Danny will be. I miss Danny. It's been too long.
He's been out of the country for quite some time.
And you're leaving too. Where are you going?
So I'm going to Chicago to celebrate the 4th of July.
Okay.
And then John and I are going to Italy.
Ooh, that sounds romantic and fun.
Yeah. All right. I'm really excited.
Well, until next time, I love you.